Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Kane Crawford, and I am an alcoholic. Could we please invite God into the room and join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Could we please have a moment of silence and gratitude for all of the AA recoveries of the past 75 years? We are here today to talk about a daily inventory. To that end, I've asked a couple of other people to read some passages from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've asked Jeff's friend Jim to come up and read a portion on page 27.
I am an alcoholic. My name is Jim Wilson. Nice to know I have a friend in the room. I've been asked to read page 27, one of the paragraphs. There is a solution. He said to the doctor, "Is there no exception?" "Yes," replied the doctor, "there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes which once were the guiding forces of the lives of these men are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them." And with that, I pass.
And I have asked Stephanie's husband, Martin, to come up and read a portion of Into Action on page 85 for us.
Hi, my name is Martin. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our will power along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Much has already been said about the receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action.
Now it is my honor to introduce our first speaker this afternoon, Irving from Louisiana.
All right, I got my clock on. Hello, everybody. I'm Irving, and I'm an alcoholic. It is an absolute privilege to be here with all you people today. Daily inventory. What I was told to do is to tell the truth. You know, I'd like to get up here and say I wake up in some kind of wonderful spiritual mood every morning, and I let the sunlight come in, and, you know, I ask for direction. And there are a few days like that. You know, there really are. You know, but if you're in here hoping to stay sober waiting on them, I wish you good luck. I'm going to share a little bit of what happened up here. You know, I guess I'm a control freak. I don't know. But I booked a whole bunch of rooms trying to take care of my friends out here, you know. And If you've never done it, don't do it. I had rooms all over the place, and come Wednesday night, I'm sitting down with a guy I served at conference with. I'm a past delegate from New York, and we're sitting out on the Miranda, and the phone starts ringing constantly. Irvin, there isn't no reservation under your name or my name, and over and over. Then one guy comes in, and you know, I got a reservation from Thursday through Sunday, but I decided to come in a day early, and I can't find a room. Can you help me? You know, all of a sudden, I'm Grand Central Station for Louisiana AA, you know, and... it got so bad, my battery literally went dead, and I can't imagine Jimmy had a charger for an iPhone. So I'm in the barroom with the charger plugged in, trying to get confirmation numbers, and after all that's over, I get a text message from a guy that got laid off last week, and he said, you know, Irvin, do you have room on your floor for me? And I had actually a bed, so I said, no, I have a bed for you. Come in my room. And all of this is occurring at about 1 o'clock in the morning, and so the guy comes in, he lays down, and I know he's in bad spiritual condition, but he goes to sleep and he starts moaning. You know? And they, oh, Lord have mercy, you know? And, you know, this guy's in bad shape. I'm not going to wake him up. And if I do, he's going to moan again anyway. And so this goes on, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, I pass out, you know? I mean, I finally can sleep with the moaning, you know? And about an hour later, this guy started sleepwalking, and he's tugging on my sheet of the bed, you know, trying to get in bed with me. And I holler, oh, you know, so I wound up Wednesday night probably getting 2 hours sleep. And 8 o'clock in the morning, my phone rings, and it's Bobby B. from Louisiana. If anybody from Louisiana know who that is, I'm in charge of the hospitality room for the Southeast region, and you know, I didn't take a lot of time to ask God for direction through all of this, you know. I'm sure you people don't have days like that, though. You know, I mean, that's really what's important, you know. There's a part in the 12x12 in the 11th step where it says we all go through times where it is difficult or impossible to pray. You know, but we just have to keep doing what we know is right until the rest of it catches up. You know, I know, I'm positive there are people that wake up every morning. I think my sponsor does meditation and, you know, takes the time. And you know what? I'm glad if you have time for that. You know, I can just go back to when I first sobered up. You know, everybody has been waiting for Irvin to slow down for 20 years, you know. And long about the fourth year, they probably said, you know, he's fixing to hit the end of the runway. We need to either get on this jet or get the hell out the way, you know. And that's really how my life's been. And, you know, God can use our defects, and I'm wide open. Without God's help, it's a complete catastrophe, you know. But with God's help, you know, we can all be of service to God. We have so many different personalities. Whenever I think of daily inventory, I mean, what you need to do is separate it out. What is our purpose? The book is real clear. My purpose is to fit myself to be a maximum service to God and the people about me. There's the end result. Now, how do I get there from being this crazy person? You know? And what it really gets down to me is, you know, I'm glad if you can just sit there and do an inventory, but I'm here to share what works for me. I got to do the other three steps. You know, I've never been able to do an inventory without one. Admitting that without God's help, the most insane thing I can do is drink, and I'm going to do it. You know, when I take the time to do that first, it's the only thing that slows me down enough to be able to do the rest of it. You know, I'm talking about what slows down a completely insane alcoholic. And those are the people I want to sponsor. You know? You know, these are the people that I want around me. And so I need to know how to handle these people. And you know, and if you want to talk about a daily inventory when I have time to do it, that's the first thing I do. You know, as I admit what I am. And I promise you people, without the help of that, understanding that, I just would not do any more inventory anyway. Well, why are you, I won't go into it. Then we get to the second step. You know, my favorite part of that is driven by self-imposed crisis, we cannot postpone or evade. What was our choice to be? I'm in self-imposed crisis every day. I'm 20 years sober. You know? And I think that's part of the inventory, I really do, is to be able to look back and say, I got to make a choice again. You know, I really believe that's part of the inventory process. Here I am 20 years sober, and I can see self-imposed crisis all over the place. And I can. If I can't, I probably don't need AA anymore. Then we get to the third step. You know, anybody that knows me knows the third step is my favorite. I know y'all aren't here for a step workshop, but just bear with me a little bit. I always said I was doing inventory when I got here, and I was. You know, I was going to bed at night trying to figure out who's trying to get me. How are they trying to get me? You know, did I get them first? You know, did I get them good? You know, and I'd go to bed at night and try to figure out what everybody might say the next day and what I was going to reply, you know, so I'd have it all covered. And you know what? I couldn't figure out why I couldn't sleep. You know, it's like, man, this sobriety stuff is tough, you know. That's because my brain's working. You know, and when I look at that, you know, what it says is selfish self-centeredness that we think is the root of our trouble. And I start to understand that my thought process, not my actions, is the problem. It starts to get pretty simple after all that stuff. Now I'm probably ready for some type of inventory, you know. And what is it? Continue to work, look for self-centeredness, fear, dishonesty. It becomes pretty simple then. And you know what? After all of that, it's not hard to see. You know, it's really not. Didn't go through the plan. And I do several inventories. You know, they say daily inventory. And, man, I could be wrong, but I haven't seen inventory in that book except for when it talks about the grocer, you know, a stock in trade, you know, because to inventory to me means an absolute stop, which it should be. But when I think of a daily inventory, you know, I think of a spot check inventory. You know, what I do many times a day is I do a very simple question. Am I capable of thinking of the needs of another human being right now? It don't get no easier than that. I've never, ever been able to go through a complete day and say yes every time. If you can, I'll tell you what. You know, I'm real glad for you. I don't want to sponsor you, but, you know, I'm real glad for you, you know. You don't need me for a sponsor. I mean, you probably don't even need a sponsor. You know, what it always comes down to is you know, I always try to think the daily inventories. I just go back to one thing. You know, I'm going to do a little piece on honesty, and it's going to really go into the daily inventory. They had a meeting having a topic of honesty, and I'm going, alcoholics talking about honesty. I said, now this is as crazy as it gets, you know. And what I thought of was, they actually called on me. I'm sitting around there. I'm about 5 years sober by this time. And I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to say what's on my mind, and that can normally be trouble. And, you know, I said, you know, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, I'm going to stay sober a year, and I'm going to get that brass chip, and I'm going to have it. You know, I'm going to have it. I said, the only problem with that, I got the brass chip, and I looked back over that year, and I said, you know, I was really freaking crazy, you know, when I got here. And I really was. I mean, I was way out there. I said, the only problem with that is I stayed sober 3 years, and I said, damn, I was really crazy at 1 year, you know that? Then I stayed sober 5 years, and I said, boy, I was really crazy at 3 years, you know? So I said, what I know about honesty is 2 years from now, I know how crazy I am today. You know, and that is the closest I have ever come to being as honest as I can. At 20 years old, sober, it's that way. And that's really what it gets into the daily inventory is. The problem is I never know what God's plan is, and I want to figure out God's plan. And I think what the daily inventory does is put me in a position where I just don't care. You know, it's an absolute position of not even trying to figure out. You know, it puts me in a position of asking for God's help, because without His help, I'm going to do the craziest thing I could possibly do, drink. I'm going to go into all kind of self-imposed crisis, and I'm going to start planning what the hell everybody's thinking. And that's guaranteed. I've done it too many times not to know that's the case. To me, that's what the daily inventory is about. It's putting myself in a position of neutrality with God. You know, to be able to be a, that's the only way I can be of maximum service to anything. And what I found out over a long period of time is that, it doesn't get any simpler than this. If I am doing my best to do God's will, all those problems I'm worried about work out immediately. Without me even worried about it. All the plans and little details I'm worried about all night. I was in the biggest question I ever had, and I can remember, I don't know if when you came in here you tried to figure out AA. You know, I was completely insane, people, and I won't even go into it. 10 minutes wouldn't come close to covering it. You know, and I'm sitting in bed at night trying to figure out how in the hell a bunch of people sitting around a table talking is going to stop me from drinking. You know, if you ain't busy enough thinking about what all the other people are going to say the next day, I got this on top of it. You know, now I got to figure out AA. And, you know, I finally came around AA long enough that I had an answer. And I'm telling you, it took a long time. You know, I can tell you another one. I don't want to become a comedian up here, but, you know, I can remember that prosaic steel girder, massive electrons. I'll tell you what, nothing blew me away like that. I said, man, I'm dying, and they're talking about electrons in this book, man, you know. But it all started to make sense. In fact, that second step made a ton of sense. I started to understand, and what I do understand finally in daily inventory is that, you know, my family had sent me to, well, they didn't even have to send me. Psychiatrists sought me out, you know. You know, this guy is disturbed. And everybody tried to do the best they could to help me. The only problem was when they asked me a question, I'm going, well, what answer do they want? I didn't even have any answers. I was null and void to answer. My favorite question was, how do you feel? You know, I'd really like to choke you. You know, I don't think you want to know how I feel. But, you know, and what the daily inventory brings me to, and what the rest of it does with the steps is it brings me down to the absolute honest position I'm in. You know, the only people that can truly affect me on the face of this earth is the people that have been where I've been. You know, I started to understand that not only did those people, they didn't even care if I talked. They were sitting around tables sharing experience, strength, and hope. And all I had to do was be there. I was too sick to be anywhere else. My social calendar was pretty open, you know. So I continued to come in the middle of you people. And what I found out is an alcoholic with a true solution can affect me like no other person can. And my daily inventory brings me back to that every time. And what happens when my daily inventory gets used is the very insane things that I was so scared about, the very same things I couldn't sleep about that had happened in the past and now I had done, it becomes the biggest asset in the world I have. You know, it's the one thing I have that I can share with you people that might save a drunk's life. And under a daily inventory and God's guidance, I can be a jet fighter, you know. I mean, I always say, you know, that they said, what would you compare yourself to? I said, I'd compare myself to an F-16. I said, because it can do just about any damn thing. But if you put one bullet in that computer, that baby's coming down as quick as it possibly can. And that's just like us. You put one bullet in God with us, you know, we can be the best damn thing you ever seen, and it's going to go to hell in about 1 hour. And it's going to stay that way until we decide to do an inventory. That's where it comes to. You know, anybody that I have sponsored, and I got them sitting right here, you know, can say that they have seen me absolutely insane. You know, and I've seen my sponsor insane. But what I've also seen is him reach down and ask God for help again on a daily basis, and he recovers again. Not only do you recover, you're even better than you ever were. And it happens over and over and over again. You know. The best tool we actually have probably is the daily inventory. You know, I do a yearly deal too, but it's amazing if you're really willing to look at it, you know, the amount of growth that we can have, you know. I can remember when I first started coming here, one of the things they would tell me is, Irvin, one day we're going to domesticate you. I'm not kidding you. They hadn't done it yet, but I mean, they're still working on it, you know, and I mean, really, all I can tell you people is, when I came to AA, I can sum it up really quick. The last 2 years of my drinking, I shook so violently I couldn't use utensils. There's some people that can relate to that and, whatever. It was just bad. But what was probably even worse than that is I was even almost subhuman. You know, I had come up from a place where, whatever the abuses or whatever the vision was, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got here from a child, I wouldn't even let a human being touch me. That's it. I was frigid. I hated people. Period. I hated you. I wasn't prejudiced. I hated all of you, you know. And one day at a time with a lot of patient people doing a hell of a lot of one-day inventories, you know, I have friends all over the country, you know, that actually like who I am, and I don't have to put on an act for them, you know. What you see is what you get, baby. Whoever knows me, this is it. This is the package, you know. And you know, I can generally generate one thought at a time. And that's about the biggest miracle I've ever seen in my life. I guess I look forward for the next time I get to be able to do my daily inventory. And another thing in that is that how about when agitated we pause? You know, just real quick, you know, I was starting to become sane to some degree, and I kept, when I'd holler at somebody 1 hour later, I'd feel it, and then that was a half hour, and then it was 15 minutes, then it was 10 minutes, and I'd just blow off the handle at everybody around me, and finally I got to the point where the stuff's coming out my mouth, and I go, why in the hell can't I stop this? That's the point when I knew I needed God's help. You know, and those daily, it's not just daily, I mean, it's constant inventory, you know. I got a real quick deal that, you know, if I feel overwhelmingly that I need to say something, I need to keep my mouth shut. You know, that's as good an inventory as you'll ever get, you know. And things like that, you know, I mean, what I know today is I'm a 2-year-old kid in an adult body running around in an adult world. And when I do my inventory that way, I understand. You know, I think when Bill wrote, he is the father, we are his children, I think he meant it just like he wrote it. You know, it's been my experience that that's exactly how it is. And every other thing in there. But we'll see what the other people have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Irving. Our next speaker this afternoon is Stephanie from Brooklyn, New York.
I'm an alcoholic and my name is Stephanie. I'd like to thank my higher power for this moment in my life, for his grace and his mercy in my life. I'd like to thank the old-timers for keeping the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous open for me. And to the newcomers, I say welcome. Keep coming no matter what. My friend saw me and they asked me why I was crying. And some of them, I told them I was scared. But mostly because of the gratitude. I called my sponsor in Chicago, and she gave me permission to cry.
Yeah.
Just like she gives me permission, 5 minutes of self-pity, Stephanie. That's all you're entitled to. Oh, God. I am so grateful. When I came into the rooms of, oh, well, let me say, my sober date is April 5th, 1990. And my home group is... My home group is Spring Creek Group of Brooklyn, New York. And I'm grateful. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1988, I came by way of my job. I got caught stealing on my job. And they said, I think you might have a problem. We've been watching you. And in 1988, I worked for the city of New York in 1988. If you worked for the city of New York and you said, yes, you agreed you had a problem, they would send you to sober, you know, detox or treatment, and you could save your job. And so I went to this facility for 7 days, knowing that the day I got out was payday. And I didn't listen to anything anybody had to say. I need to say that the person that you see before you is not the woman who came in here in 1988, and not the woman certainly who surrendered in 1990. I'm a product of bring the body and the mind will follow completely. I'm a product of no matter what happens in your life, you just keep coming. So let me just back up and just tell you that what happened when I got the letter to come here. I was sitting on my bed by myself. And we had registered in September to come, and I got this letter, and my husband's not home, and I'm sitting there, and I'm reading this letter, and it's from General Service Office. And it says, you have been invited to, and I'm screaming, this is crazy! This is crazy! Because the God, as I understand him, took a wretch of a woman, a shell of a person, and allowed her to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and almost kill herself in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because she was not able to trust the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for 18 months and I compared and did not identify. I thought that when I made meetings, I was not supposed to think about drinking. And I'm saying this because if there's anybody in this room and you're still thinking about drinking, if you're an alcoholic, first of all, if you're here, you're probably not here by accident. I don't believe that anything happens by coincidence in life. And if you're here, you might just have a problem with drinking. You might. But that's not for me to take your inventory. That's for you to take your own inventory. But I compared and I did not identify, and I said, if you are a poor little black girl from Brooklyn raising two kids by yourself, you drink too. And drinking was the solution to everything that was happening in my life at that time. I was raising these two children, and the relationship that I was in was over, and I was in pain. I was in pain. I had no self-esteem. I had no sense of self-worth. I was just putting one foot in front of the other every single day for as long as I could. And I was in such a degree of denial because I had a job. I had a job. I had an apartment. The Bureau of Child Welfare had not come into my life. And my higher power at that time saw fit to put me in my job. I worked in the men's shelter. And I was a counselor. I wasn't a counselor, but I would counsel them, you know, because we draw, you know, we can spot each other, you know, and I would tell them, you know, if you weren't drinking and if you weren't drugging, maybe your wife would take you back. You know, you need to stop doing what you're doing. And in the meantime, I would send them out of the drill floor because we had the shelter in the armory and they would be my runners and they would go. And so I became the queen of that shelter. you know, with my royal subjects who were the homeless men of Brooklyn. And they would do my bidding as I did my drinking and my other things. And by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was broken. I was broken. I was pitiful. I was, but I had this ego and I had this image and I had this facade. You know, I had this persona that I had to perfect. So you could not know who I was. You could not know that there was no food in the refrigerator. You could not know that, you know, the clothes that I had on were the same clothes that I had just pulled out of the black garbage bag the night before, trying to find the cleanest of the dirty clothes. You could not know that I could not stand for water to touch my body because the water hurt. You could not know that when I went home from work, I stayed in the bathroom. And I did what I had to do. And if my kids knocked on the door of the bathroom, God helped them. And through God's grace and His mercy, He brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened to me, I was working on a job and the lady who sat right next to me was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she kept leaving this damn literature on the desk. And you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm a liar. And you know, by this time, you know, my absences from work were becoming more and more frequent. I told them that my son burned down the house. I would never say, though, I was really a little bit honest, because I would never say that somebody died. You know, I never said, well, you know, my uncle this died or my aunt that, because I figured if they really did die, then it would be my fault. So I figured it was easier if I said my son burned down the house. I blame it on the kids. God couldn't, you know. And so I start missing days from work. And the lady who was sitting next to me, she was making meetings at lunchtime. And one day I asked her, I said to her, can I make one of those meetings with you? And this lady like did some commercial stuff. She did a high kick up in the air and she started taking me to these meetings in Midtown Manhattan called lunchtime meetings. And I went to these lunchtime meetings and I was probably one of the youngest people in the room. And again, it was, if you were this poor little black girl from Brooklyn raising these two kids by yourself, you would drink too. Because I was in the meeting and there were lawyers and doctors and da-da-da-da-da, and that wasn't me. But one of the things that they said, well, several things that they said was get a meeting in your neighborhood. Get a home group in your neighborhood. I wasn't going to do that. This is just fine. Monday through Friday is just fine. Get a sponsor. I wasn't going to do that. I need to say that I come from a really large family. My father had 14 brothers and sisters, and my grandmother told us that, you know, whatever happened in my house stayed in my house, period. And we used to have our own meetings like this. You know, and they would solve whatever, if you had a problem, they would solve the problem themselves. So I wasn't raised that you go out and you tell. And my dad, God rest his soul, who was sober when he died, when he was young, I remember him telling my mom he wasn't going to those meetings because he wasn't telling these people his business. And that stuck with me. So what happened for me was that a day at a time, the pain outweighed the pleasure. It's real simple. The pain outweighed the pleasure. And I began, and it was progressive in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I continued to drink and I continued to do other things. I continued to sit in meetings and not raise my hand and not let anybody get to know who I was. And I continued to believe that it was not the first one. I continue to believe that for 18 months, and it is possible for you to suffer in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and almost die because that's my story. It happened to me. I could not figure out how I could get home with my money because now, still, after 18 months of making meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't figure out how to get home on Fridays with my paycheck and not stop off at the liquor store, the bodega, or the spot. Couldn't figure that out. So I raised my hand in Stuyvesant Group in a beginner's meeting, and I asked them just that simple question because they said there are no stupid questions in AA. The only stupid questions are the ones that you don't ask. And I said, how do I get home? How do I stop the thoughts in my head? How do I stop the thoughts that tell me to drink? And they told me that I was an alcoholic, and the most natural thing for me to do was to think about drinking. And I had to allow people in my life to help me learn how not to act upon my thoughts. That was the beginning of my recovery. Now, this is a daily inventory meeting, and thank you for sharing, Irvin. I don't know a page in the book number. I can't stand up here and say, look, I'm page 83. Well, I know the promises on page 83 because I just looked at the promises on page 83, so I could say that to you, but I don't know. I don't know. But the daily inventory for me is real simple. It's how you living. How you living a day at a time, Stephanie? What did you do today in your life that might have had a negative effect or impact on another human being? It was very difficult. The first inventory that I ever took, the first honest inventory I ever took, was about my drinking. Because they told me to get honest about my drinking. And I had to learn how to play the tape all the way through. It wasn't in the middle when I was sitting in the after-hours spot or I was in a club or I was dancing. It was all the way at the end when it was gone again and I did it again and again and again and again. And it wasn't until I was able to take an honest look at my drinking that I was able to surrender to the fact that I had a problem. I need to go off a little bit because I would not allow myself to think about this meeting. So therefore, I have nothing prepared. I don't have all I have is me and all I have is my story. And so if I go here and I go there, my sponsor said that's okay. And I'm telling you what my sponsor said is the truth. So she said it's okay. I could do what whatever. All of my life, I have been a victim. All of my life, it has been about whatever you did to me. That was the cause of what I did to you. All of my life. All of my life, I have been afraid. I can remember in elementary school not being, I didn't want to come out fear-based. So you take the fear and you take the victim and you put a drink on top of that. You take a liar and you take a cheat and you put a drink on top of all of that. And what do you have? You have a broken woman trying to learn how to stay sober a day at a time. You have a egomaniac with low self-esteem. You have a woman who was working in a shelter who was on the glass tower and she had her subject serving her. And you have Stephanie, the princessa, who has now decided that she is not going to drink anymore. And I had to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I had to be told. I had to be told because I didn't think I abused my children. I had to be told when you call them kids motherfuckers in the middle of the night or, when you pick them up, abuse is not just leaving your kids. I had to learn that. Oh, I have a job, and BCW is not in my life. No, but when I picked my son up by his neck and I held him up against the wall because I had a hangover and he was getting on my nerves, that's abuse. I had to get honest about who I really was. I had to get honest about the exact nature of my wrongs. Irvin said that, not every morning he gets up. There are some mornings and where I'm at in my life is, just trying to, for a long period, and I would say the last couple of years, trying to get my thoughts spiritually based after I do whatever it is I do. In the morning, like read the daily reflections and the 12 and 12. And I got a whole bunch of stuff in my bathroom, a whole basket full of books. The 24-hour book, the daily reflections, the meditation of this. And, then I get in the shower right after I finish. From here to the shower and be trying to figure out how I'm going to kill the people on my job. Listen. Oh, gosh. Okay. I'm going to say to you that they told me that this is not a head trip, that this is a heart journey. And while I have to do the work, and I'm in the process of going through the steps again, while I have to do the work, I have to learn how to live sober and have sober behaviors. I have to learn how to look at the, justifiable anger. Justifiable anger. Early sobriety, sitting in a meeting, in the big book meeting, and read that I could not be justifiably angry while I was pissed off. Everything that I've learned about becoming a different woman, becoming a different person, I've learned because people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous have walked me through this process of life. They have been able to be honest enough with me to be able to tell me, Stephanie, you full of shit. You are not a princess, sir. You did this, you did this, and look at the part that you played in it. What part did I play in it? And when I learned how to ask myself that question at the end of every day or in the middle of the day, I don't have a set time where I sit down right. I go to bed at 10 o'clock. At 9:45, I'm not in my bed trying to figure out what part I played in it or where that's not who I am. But through the course of my day, and I noticed that my days, if my days are getting better, that's because I'm living better. That's because I'm learning to walk in I'm learning to walk in my higher power's will. Now in the 11th step, it talks about prayed only for the knowledge of his will and the power to carry that out. I know damn well what God's will is for me every single day. I know what God's will for me is. God's will for me is to be loving, honest. His will for me is to be a worker among workers. His will for me is to do the right thing no matter what. There's no right way to do a wrong thing. God's will for me is not to cuss somebody out. God's will for me on my job is when they see me coming, you know, that I should change my behavior so that my coworkers, when they see me coming, don't scurry around like little rats trying to get out of my way. That's what God's will for me. God's will for me is to be the best possible person that I could be at any given moment, in spite of myself, in spite of myself. That's where the uncomfortability comes, because I know what God wants me to do, my higher power. Because there may be somebody in here who don't believe in God. Somebody, you know, I already know. My struggle is the power to carry it out. The power to carry that out. How do you do the right thing in spite of? How do you do the right thing in spite of? I always want to cuss somebody out. I always want to cuss somebody out. A lot of times I don't. For me, I have to keep this program as simple as I possibly can, and it's how you're living. How you're living, Stephanie, when I lay my head down at night. Have you been the best possible person, sober person that you could be a day at a time today? Sometimes I can't live in the day. Sometimes I have to live in the moment. Sometimes I have to live in the hour. How you living? Again, you know, somebody's walking around selling some T-shirts down here. I'm not a saint. I'm not a saint. I didn't know what I was going to say. And for all of you who are sitting here, if there's somebody here who is like counting days, or if there's any one person in here who got something out of anything that I said, then I've done what my higher power wants me to do. I probably, when I sit down, won't remember anything that I said. I'm just really, really grateful. I'm not a broken woman today. I'm not a shell of a person today. And that is only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't even begin to tell you the difference in my insides than the day I surrendered to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. God did an excellent job today. Now I'd like to introduce Jeff from Wisconsin.
Hi, I'm Jeff Campbell, and I'm an alcoholic. I was really kind of wondering, can I have your sponsor's phone number? Because if I start crying up here, my sponsor will probably bark out, man up, for Christ's sake. I don't know. he's a lot nicer than that. You know, it's funny, I never write things up for talks, and it was this like 20-minute thing, and I said, well, I'll write it up, and now I know why I don't, because I've rewritten it 27 times since I sat down right there and started listening to these two. So we'll see where this goes. You know, but through the utter failure of my attempts to marshal my alcoholism with my human resources, the grace of a loving God that I, to this day, still don't understand, and I believe, even more importantly, actions taken in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I finally have not found it necessary to take a drink since May the 12th of 1997. And so, for that myself, almost everybody around me are pretty grateful for that. You know, it was interesting because we weren't really planning on coming to this just because what I do and where I live, it's a difficult time of year. It's pretty busy. And my wife and I have not had a week off in the middle of the summer in about 7 years. But I've been talking with my sponsor about, he's been kind of poking at me a little bit about daily inventory and step 10 and for several months, probably since before Christmas, and it was getting to be March, and all of a sudden I got this letter, a loving invitation to come and speak on a daily inventory, and my initial reaction was to call him up and say, I know you know a lot of people in AA, but how'd you manage to pull that one off? So here I am. You know, I guess the whole thing for me is, why do I need to do a daily inventory? You know, heck, I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing. Why do I need to do one? I just, you know, that always comes to me. I'm a guy who needs to know, have a good, solid reason, and see what the answer is going to be on why I should do something. And I really, I guess, can't answer that question in any other way except for to tell my story of why it's important to me. And, you know, I'm a guy, I didn't get sober easily. I bounced in and out of treatment in AA for about 6 years. And, I would get sober, I just could never stay that way. And most of us have that experience, I think. If we could just get sober and stay that way, why come to AA? You know, some of us get that when we come in the doors the first time. And some of us don't get that when we come in the doors for a long time. But certainly, I know I have this in common with almost everybody in the room. I know there are some Al-Anon here, but, you know, at some point in time, we all looked at a drink, said, man, I got a problem here, tried to put it down and couldn't keep it down. You know, because somebody that can doesn't need what we've got here. You know, and I balked at everything in Alcoholics Anonymous. There wasn't anything that you could present to me that I didn't balk at, except for, maybe, geez, Jeff, don't you think you ought to quit drinking? And maybe you ought to go to meetings. And the only time I'd let anybody near enough to me to ask that question was when the heat was on. You know, I'm thrown out of my house, or I get caught stealing money, or, you know, whatever it was. Those wonderful things that we do, and I've done most of them. You know, consequences would arise, and I'd get sober again. And again, and again, and again, and again. And, you know, when I finally was given the grace, it really wasn't a matter of that I wanted to quit drinking. You know, I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous because I don't ever want to start again. But really what it was is that on one day at the same time, I was given basically two gifts. And the main one was the fact that at the same moment, my thinking and my drinking wouldn't work at the same time. I couldn't think myself out of the problem, and I couldn't drink myself out of the problem. Those things never seemed to line up, you know, except for when I was finally given that opportunity. And what it was absolute despair. You know, those are the two things I had had great faith in my whole life. I had always relied on my thinking, my able to get my way out of it, or to drink my way out of the way I was feeling. And I didn't even know that's what it was until I looked back at the history of it through my inventory. But that's what it was. So I got despair, and then I was given the gift of desperation. And it was all about, I just can't keep living this way. You know, it's not a matter of that I wanted to quit drinking or anything. It was really, I was trying to wrest satisfaction out of this world by managing well. And I had been trying to do that my whole life before I started drinking and after I started drinking and all the time I spent in AA not getting sober. And I was just tired. You know, that's what it was for me. I just finally got tired. Interesting when you said something that came up to me. I remember a couple of years before I got sober, a woman chased me out of a meeting I'd been going to for a long time. In fact, one of my old home group members is sitting up here in front. So between that and my sponsor and my wife, and I want to thank two of you over there that sat between my sponsor and my wife so that they can't take too many notes right now. If I can just get you to stay there until they leave the room, that would be greatly appreciated. This woman chased me down out in the parking lot, came up and grabbed me by the arm, turned me around, looked me right in the eye and said, you know, if you don't let anybody get to know you, you are never going to make it. And that's, you know, 2 years before I got sober. I'm sure that I was not in a very clear state of mind. But there were many things told to me throughout my life that had truth behind them, and I can remember it. I can remember who it was, what she said. I think probably even, at least in the picture in my mind, where the sun was that day. All those good things. So one of the things that I had throughout my life, it's really the cross that I bear, you know. And that is that if I could just get you to cooperate, I'd be all right. And I do that. That's pretty much what my inventory on a moment-to-moment daily basis comes down to, is am I trying to arrange the world to suit me, and don't worry, you'll be okay too. That's just, you know, I'm still there. Even trying to work this program, like a friend of mine says, it's like my hair's on fire. So I got desperate enough. But finally, what happened is that on basically about May 9th, it was like the last week or so before I got sober, is that absolutely no one was doing my will anymore. My wife had gone to Al-Anon, you know. And I used to be able to come in and pick a fight with her and deflect the problem, and she wasn't buying into it anymore. My two younger brothers and my dad, who are all sober a lot longer than I am, weren't buying into it anymore. My friends didn't want me around anymore, so they weren't buying into it anymore. There was just nothing left. It was me. And that was a really ugly place for me to be. So I finally got, you know, tired, and I got desperate. So now here I sit. I'm following some direction. I actually went. What happened is that I drove around the last day. I was thrown out of my house, thrown out of my business. Everybody told me, we don't care where you go, just go away. And I'm driving around, and I went. And one thing that never turned on me was marijuana. And so I went to a friend's house who I knew would help me in that area, and he did. But when I walked away from there, I knew that it didn't work. You know, I was inebriated in our program, we'll call it that. But nothing changed. And so I'm driving around, and I'm just in despair. I do not know where I'm going to turn and what I'm going to do. I can't make money anymore. I have no house to live in. I've got barely enough money to get like 10 blocks in my car. what am I going to do? And the thought came to my head, you have an AA sponsor, don't you? You know, I was like, where did that come from? And said, yeah, and okay, he's taking me into his house. He's never turned me away. He's always listened to me whine. He's never talked to me about steps. He's never talked to me about much of anything, but he's always listened to my BS. And so I drove up to his house, pulled into his driveway, walked in there and sat down at his kitchen table. He looked right at me and he said, And he took out a mug with an 800 number for a treatment center and a telephone. And he put it on the table and he said, make a decision. And he got up and he walked out the door. It was maybe 20 steps, got in his car and drove away. I'm pretty sure he went and sat around the corner watching his house because he has a lot of good things in there, and that would have relieved me of my immediate problem, which was I was out of money the way I saw it. And I sat there for a while trying to come up with a plan, and I couldn't come up with one. And so I made that call, and short story of it, but eventually I'm talking to this treatment center, and they said, oh, yeah, come on up. Just bring a check for $14,000 and you're in. And that is exactly what I did. I just laughed and I said, if I had $140 left, I wouldn't be talking to you. And that was the truth. But what happened at that moment, really, I had a couple other moments in the next 48 hours, but at that point in time, I started to take direction. And that is something that I did not do, and still, I like to talk about it and say that I do, but just like we heard up here, and I'm sure that everybody in this room has this experience of we talk a good game, we don't always walk a good game. But I started to do the things, you know. So here I am. I'm now an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sober with the help of, them sending me long way away from my primary environment, giving me the help that I need to get sober. Went to a halfway house. Did what I needed to do there, and they hooked me into AA. I'd been going. I'd probably been to 500 meetings. I'd said I'd been to about 1,500, but I only went to about one out of three. In fact, somebody's here I saw earlier. The first time I ever gave a talk was something like this, where my sponsor was there, my wife was there, my kids were there, my family was there, my home group was there. There were about a third as many people are in the room. And I said, man, that was a really weird talk, because I had, been drinking before the talk. And I was a short speaker, and my dad was a speaker afterwards, and the guy who came up between said, oh, no, I remember actually Jeff's first talk. Yeah, his sponsor was here, his wife was here, his kids were here, his family was here, his home group was here. The only problem is that Jeff never showed up. So they gave me another chance a couple of months later to go up and talk and tell my story again. And I get the opportunity to go back and visit there, and some of those people are good friends of mine today. I'm about 4 months sober, and I'm living 300 miles from home, and my life is still kind of, what's going to happen here? But that's the first time I'd ever had that much sobriety time since I first started drinking. And this counselor that I had, who's not an AA member, kept on hammering on me, saying, you got to let somebody help you. You got to let somebody help you. And so finally, I'm walking. My home group is called the Confused Idealist Group. And there's a story in the book, A Vicious Cycle, that talks about that. I'm with this guy who I find out later was kind of trolling for me, because it's a meeting where you count off and you break up into small groups. And for some reason, three times in a row, I'm in his group. Well, I find out he goes up and talks to the guy who's moderating the meeting, saying, what's the count going to be tonight? Then he goes and counts to make sure he's sitting that many seats away from me, so he's in my group, because he was trolling for me, recognized himself in me. And so we're going up the back stairs at this church. It's me and him on the stairs. And I look up, and I say, I looked around first, and then I looked up and said, hey, Matt, you got time for another drunk? And he looked down. He turned around on the stairs and looked down at me and said, I thought you had a sponsor. And this is where Grace stepped in again, because it's something I do not do. I said, yeah, but it's not working real well. And, he said to me right after that, the thing I'm convinced saved my life today, and that's what he said, well, you know what, I've got nothing but time for somebody who wants to recover. And he proceeded to walk me through the big book and walk me through steps, and still to this day is very active in my life. A couple of years ago, I got a new sponsor just for reasons that I did. Nothing to do with Matt, actually, just somebody who was as busy in AA as I was, or busier, or actually much busier, but somebody who could kind of relate to some of the stuff I was talking about. But Matt started to walk me through the steps, and here I am. I now arrive at step 10, starting to put my life back together again. Things are coming together, and I was asked to give a presentation in a group. It was on step 10. And what I remembered was this sampler that I had on my wall from when I was a tiny little kid. My great aunt had made it. And at the same time, I'm starting to read this book called A New Pair of Glasses. And in there is a poem, for whatever, it's called something else. But it says, "One ship sails east, another west, with the selfsame winds that blow. 'Tis the set of the sails, and not the gales, which determines the way they go." And that was hanging on my wall since I was able to read. I think it's one of the first things I ever memorized or ever read. And that's what this 10th step has done for me ever since. You know, no matter what is going on in my life, I can sit and look at how are my sails set. You know, am I set towards trying to build a relationship with this God that I don't understand? Have I trying to be of service in my life? Am I trying to be loving and kind and tolerant? And you know, just maybe you should pray for my wife who's here. She just got to spend about 30 hours in the car alone with me. She'd give a whole different talk about the way things have been probably up here right now than I am. but you know, that has really helped me throughout. I made a commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have made this what I try to be in the middle of the wagon. I've been in service. I sponsor guys. I have a sponsor. I have a prayer life. I try to be of service and be kind and tolerant to people. But what I found is that if I am not starting off, and whether it's a spot check inventory or any type of spiritual work I'm going to do, it, like 11th step work, that I need to take that inventory. I need to get on my side of the street. You know? I'm looking out here in a crowd, and there's about 20 guys that I know that are going to be here, and there's about 5 of them here. So I did promise any of them, if they didn't come, I was going to give their inventory up here, which I'm very good at. I'll save that for another talk. That, if I'm not taking my inventory and getting clear, I really liked what Irving said about that. That's where I've got to get first. I got to get enough of me out of the way that I can start to have this communication. Or even better yet, maybe that God can communicate with me. Because normally what communicates with me is my sick head. A very good thing that came from my sponsor not too long ago, actually, was a thing that I know that I have done for a long time with my inventory, is to look at what my actions are. You know, not to inventory my thoughts and not to inventory my feelings. Because if I do that, you know, out comes the gun and whatever else. I'm going to try and run people over and try and get them to cooperate with my plan and all that stuff. But if I'm looking at what actions I'm taking, no matter how bad I'm feeling or even how crazy I'm thinking, tell you the truth, I'm really doing pretty well spiritually. And then there's times where I think I am just doing wonderfully. And you look at my actions, and there's, you know, like you said, they're like scurrying away like ants, right? Everybody's just backing up and trying to get away from me. And that pretty much can tell me that things aren't going well. And a lot of times that's when I'm feeling really just fine, and I think everything's okay. So that's what I can do to try and get spiritually fit, is to take my inventory, to look at it, to grow in understanding and effectiveness. If I am just constantly looking at you, which is my default position, I can guarantee you that. So I need to take the 10th step inventory. I need to make a decision to do that. I'd love to be in a place where it's just what happens to me naturally, but very, very infrequently is that the case. It's almost always, you are my problem. And that's not good for anybody around me. So that's really what has helped me the most. Probably what today is the most important word in the steps for me comes in the 10th step, and that's that word continue. It's probably the most important. It's also probably the most difficult. Because my mind doesn't want me, my ego, whatever it is you want to call it, my alcoholism, it does not want me to continue to try and grow spiritually. It wants to keep me as asleep as possible. And so what I can do is make a decision that I'm, you know, willing to try, you know, and really believe that line we have that says that for the alcoholic whose hope, whose only hope is the growth and maintenance of a spiritual experience. If I believe that, then I've got to learn to practice step 10. That will allow me then to be clear enough that I can start to do some work on step 11. Another suggestion that he had for me, right when I had asked him a couple days before that letter came, the invitation for this, I said, you know, I really need something specific. Will you please give me something specific to do? And that's how definite I have to get about asking sometimes. And he talked to me about the prayer of St. Francis. And I can't tell you how many times in the last 3 months I have found myself starting that prayer. And I started off right away as, where there is harmony, may I bring discord. You know, where there is peace, may I, you know, I'm just, that's just the way I am. I don't understand that. But it's been an interesting observation, you know, so there it is in the inventory, looking at what happens with that. You know, the other thing has been is page 86, 87, and really looking at those things. Am I being selfish and dishonest and resentful, self-centered, and judgmental? You know, yes. A good day is when I haven't been 3 or 4 times, you know, immediately. It's been a real life, you know, not, can't say life-saving, Alcoholics Anonymous would save my life, but it's certainly been a very pain-saving thing to learn to do the 10th step and keep working on it. You know, I have, really, when I look at it and I find, you know, it talks about in the ABCs that, you know, that I am alcoholic. But one of the things I didn't understand for a long time, some of the people around me understood it and they saw it. I just wouldn't let them close enough to me to tell me what it meant. But when it finally meant what it is to be alcoholic, that's when I got, you know, very willing to do whatever. As long as I don't lose track of that, then I'm willing to understand B. And Matt told me originally when we were reading that part of the book, he says, well, Jeff, I tell you what, how about if you just drop the probably part? You know, that no human power can relieve your alcoholism. And I do believe that to this day. And if I believe that God could and would, if I'm really convinced of those ideas and the first requirement that I be convinced that my life run on my will is not going to be a success, then it's pretty easy for me to really to take the 10th step and to continue to look at that. Like I said, I wish it was my default position, but it certainly must be a lot better. I'm still with my wife. My dad's one of my best friends. The people around me rely on me. Most of the people don't go running screaming from the room when I come in. Some days, but most days they don't. You know, I'm convinced of those 5 ideas in the ABCs, and I can continue to do this. So I've tried a whole bunch of different 10-step things. It's been very effective, page 86 and 87, looking at it, this daily thing. I just can't seem to practice step 11 without being coupled with the 10th step, and that's worked very well. So I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to share my experience with you, and most of all, I'd like to thank you for my life. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It says that I can take a moment. I'm just going to take just about that. One of the reasons that I read that portion or had that portion of chapter 2 read is it says the ideas, emotions, and attitudes which were once the guiding forces of the lives of these men were suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. So that doesn't mean they're gone entirely. They've been set aside. I'm going to tell you, for me, you set aside a chocolate pie and leave me alone, the guests are in trouble, all right? They're not going to have no chocolate pie. My first reaction to almost anything in my life is still those behaviors and those attitudes and those ideas that I lived in for a very long time in my life. Those things that are comfortable and safe for me. not necessarily what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's why when I was invited, and Stephanie talked about that, I was so overwhelmed with gratitude to be asked to do this. And then when I saw what the topic was, because it's so dear to my heart, I was just overwhelmed. Because that inventory process is so important to me, because it's what allows me to recognize my growth. It's what allows me to acknowledge the power of God in my life on a daily basis. Yeah, I have to look at my behavior. I have to look at the things that I've done wrong. But I'll tell you what, I don't need a whole lot of help with that. I'm an expert at beating myself up. I would never allow you to treat me the way I treat me. Never. That would be unacceptable. I would not allow you to treat my friends like I treat me. I don't need help beating myself up, but I do need help sometimes remembering that I've got to acknowledge that power that's given me the life that I enjoy today. And the 10th step offers me that opportunity. That inventory, whether it's a spot check inventory like Irving talked about on a daily basis, you know, that's true too. When I'm on the freeways of Los Angeles, hello, when I'm on the freeways of Los Angeles and I let somebody in, instead of challenging him to a duel, that's spiritual growth. Now, it may seem like a very simple, very small thing, but that's spiritual growth. And I need to acknowledge where that comes from, because that's not from within me, not of my own thinking. That's the power of God in my life. This room is the power of God in my life. For a nickel. You know, newcomers have such a hard time picking up the phone, and Bill wouldn't put it down. And thank God that he spent every one of those nickels that he spent to find somebody to start us on this road. I've asked my friend Laura to come up and read the promises for us. And then my friend Chicago Bob, who lives in Reno. They do things differently in Nevada. Is going to lead us in the Lord's Prayer. Thank you so much.
I'm Laura, I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Laura.
Thanks, King. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Very quickly, before we say the Lord's Prayer, let's give our speakers another hand. Thank you very much.